This is The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina in for Kate Archer Kent. And United States Representative Mike Gallagher is with us for the next half an hour. We're focusing on the response to COVID-19, his role as a member of Congress, and what happens next. That includes one-time payments from the federal government to support American households. We're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for Congressman Gallagher or other elected officials? Now that the first steps in the coronavirus relief have happened, what should priorities be and what steps should the government take? 800-642-1234. You can also email your thoughts, your questions to ideas@WPR.org. U.S. Representative Mike Gallagher is a Republican who represents Wisconsin's 8th congressional district, which includes Green Bay. He was elected in 2016. Congressman, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
On Friday, President Donald Trump signed the new coronavirus relief bill. It's an historic $2 trillion bill. Now that it's passed, what's your next priority as a federally elected official?
Well, I think the most important part of the bill is the direct appropriation for hospitals and healthcare providers, those on the front lines. We've appropriated over $100 billion, including $27 billion for research on tests and treatments, as well as medical supplies, PPE, $4 billion for the CDC, $1 billion for NIH to continue developing a vaccine. So my own view is that you have to look at this first through the lens of defeating the disease or controlling the disease, look at it through the lens of a healthcare crisis. And the quicker we can control the disease using data to understand how it's spreading and how we are controlling it, the quicker our economy will recover. So I actually think that will be the most impactful. As an elected official, what I've been doing for the last week and a half as someone who's sort of at the intersection of Wisconsin and the federal government is trying to serve as a valuable resource for information, trying to connect people here in Wisconsin to the right people with the task force at the White House, and trying to ensure that ultimately that money is well spent so that we can quickly control the disease and eventually start getting back to normal.
Yeah, and we've seen money kind of doled out a little bit inconsistently across different states. So how are you advocating for Wisconsin to get the dollars and the medical supplies that our state's healthcare providers need right now?
Well, I will say I've been very encouraged and proud of the way in which the delegation, which has Republicans and Democrats, is really working together in order to make an argument to FEMA, make an argument to DOD in many cases, that Wisconsin needs its share of the national strategic stockpile. For example, we've sent multiple delegation-wide letters to that effect. We've gotten an allotment from the stockpile. But we haven't gotten the full amount, and hopefully we get that. But I would say, you know, I've been on the phone almost every single day with my colleague Mark Pocan, and we're trying to work together to make sure that Wisconsin gets the supplies it needs. Now, I will say we are running into a difficulty, and that is obviously every single hospital in America is rushing to increase its stocks of masks, of basic protective gear, gowns, gloves, things like that. And because the federal government has assumed extraordinary power through the Stafford Act, the Defense Production Act, it now has the ability to reroute certain orders that hospitals have placed with private sector providers to other higher priority areas. And now, obviously, right now, Wisconsin, thankfully, in some regards, isn't seen as one of the highest priority areas in relation to New York, for example, where we're really seeing extensive community spread. However, now is the time when we want to prepare to not only slow the spread, but raise that capacity line in Wisconsin so that should the worst case scenario manifest itself, we aren't scrambling to find supplies from other places. So I'm using every tool in my arsenal to try and make sure, at least in Northeast Wisconsin, our hospitals have what they need.
Mike Gallagher is a Republican who represents Wisconsin's 8th congressional district, which includes Green Bay, elected in 2016. And we are talking about his role as a member of Congress in this COVID-19 pandemic. Your calls are welcome at 800-642-1234. And Congressman, I want to circle back to that vote on the economic stimulus during COVID-19. When the bill first came up for vote in the House in mid-March, you, along with all of Wisconsin's other GOP representatives, voted against it. We saw Wisconsin being the only state in the nation where we saw Republicans on one side against this kind of relief. Why did you vote no?
Well, that was the 2.0 bill, not the 3.0 bill that we just passed. Right. So there were basically three bills that have moved. The first was the direct appropriation of $8.3 billion for the healthcare fight, which we all proudly supported. The second was the 2.0 that every Republican in the delegation voted against for some obvious reasons. The idea was to force small businesses and medium-sized businesses, those between 50 and 500 employees, to pay upwards of 10 to 12 weeks of leave to their employees. One of the things that struck me as curious, if not downright wrong, was that bigger companies, 500 employees or more, those who actually generally have the cash on hand to both pay their employees and weather the storm, were completely exempted from the bill. So it seemed to place a burden on the small businesses in Wisconsin that were struggling the most. And I would say to this day, the Treasury Department still hasn't fully explained how the tax credit process, which is intended to compensate those small businesses, is going to work. And finally, what we've seen between the passage of that bill and as of last Friday was something that we expected might happen. And unfortunately, I think we were right, which is a historic level of jobless claims, upwards of 3.3 million. That far beats the previous record of 700,000. And so those are all people that aren't getting sick leave, aren't getting paid family leave because they no longer have a job. Now, luckily, in this third bill, we did fix some of those deficiencies. Most people are going to get, if they qualify based on income level, based on their 2018 tax returns, a direct payment of $1,200. There are some ways in which that is indiscriminate and doesn't really account for whether you lost your job related to coronavirus, but getting cash into the hands of those small businesses and workers that the government forced to shut down for public health reasons strikes me as a very good idea.
Yeah, I wonder, though, is that enough? I mean, we know it's based on 2018 taxes, unless you filed for 2019. We know it's a check-based system or direct deposit. I mean, is that enough that it could take weeks or months to get this money to Americans when we have some more modern ways to get money into people's hands right now, digitally?
Well, I think that's a very legitimate and great question, because though Secretary Mnuchin has said they're going to use direct deposit, it depends. So it's potentially immediately or in a span of weeks, get that money to you. It depends on whether you already have direct deposit set up with how you get compensated for your tax returns. And a lot of people don't. And I just would say, you know, if we're waiting a month or a month and a half or till the end of the quarter for businesses to get their Small Business Administration loan that we've made available under this bill, or for individuals to get that $1,200 check or more for a family, depending on how many children they have, it could be too late, right? We're discovering we're about 15 days right now into this quasi-quarantine, this shelter in place to slow down the spread. And we're discovering how costly it is, particularly if you are someone living paycheck to paycheck, or if you're a business that can't survive with no cash for 2 weeks, let alone 2 months. And so I guess the honest answer is we don't know. My hope, though, is given how what I'm seeing on the ground here in Northeast Wisconsin, where we have so many smart people in the medical industry mobilizing to try and fight this disease and use data to fight smartly, my hope is that we can get this under control and arrive at a second phase of this soon, where some people who are either immune or at low risk are able to go back to work, where we can keep our economy moving. Because my observation is that if it costs us $2 trillion to cover the cost of 2 weeks to 2 months, 2 months from now, if we have to keep cutting $2 trillion checks, that's quickly going to add up. And so I really hope that we can find a way to defeat the disease. And I'll say it again, I believe that's the best way ultimately to save our economic livelihood in Wisconsin.
And we'll talk about that with Congressman Mike Gallagher, who stays with us here on the morning show. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Congressman Mike Gallagher says Wisconsin's response to the new coronavirus spreading may be different than big cities like New York City and Los Angeles. He's our guest this morning, and we're learning why that is and what he plans to do in Washington to support people in our home state during this global pandemic. You can join the conversation here on The Morning Show. Email us at ideas@WPR.org. I'm Keely Boltina, and we have some calls here. Rick from West Bend has a question for us. Hi, Rick.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly. My what are you wondering?
My question is with the governor's stay-at-home initiative that he's taking. I'm a local truck driver, and it's business as usual out here. There's been 1% of the companies that I see are closing, and everybody's got an angle. Why have not more places been closed? I'm going by construction sites. That can close for 2 weeks, but they're not. And I don't see how that's essential.
And, Rick, so you're thinking we should just have essential businesses open right now?
That's all. Unless they're making surgical masks and gloves and ventilators, not somebody that's making the plastic that goes on something that's really irrelevant to the situation that we're in.
All right. Thanks for the question, Rick. Congressman Gallagher, Rick is saying we've told essential businesses to keep operating and everybody else to stop for public health, and that's not happening. He's looking for more enforcement.
Yeah, if I had to suggest a hypothesis for why that is, and I think, Rick, I've seen similar things in my neck of the woods in northeast Wisconsin. One, I do think it's fair to say there are still people who aren't taking coronavirus seriously or who think that it is just the seasonal flu. I do not count myself in that camp. You know, I come from a family of physicians, and they've been warning about this for a long time. So it's incumbent upon all of this to convince our neighbors, particularly younger people. You know, I'm an old millennial. You know, it's my generation that really, if you believe the initial data, which suggests we're in the healthier population, needs to be disciplined in terms of obeying social distancing because we can be asymptomatic carriers of the disease. The second part of it, Rick, is I think the governor is discovering that it is very difficult to draw this line between essential and non-essential businesses, right? You know, for example, I have a camera and audiovisual company in my district, which is essential. And at first you might not think it is, but it does the audiovisual equipment and a lot of the tech side for our local police department and for our hospital systems. And so it's very difficult to draw that line, which is ultimately why, you know, I've written encouraging the governor and others to think through what is the next phase of this look like? You know we can't stay shut down completely forever, could we arrive at a hybrid model based on the advice of the health experts, but still allowing people to go back to work while we maintain a strict but strategic quarantine of the already infected and most vulnerable, and then leveraging technology not only to better understand the disease, but to do things like complete the school year so our kids don't fall further behind.
Congressman Gallagher, on that note, you actually wrote an op-ed about this recently in the Wisconsin State Journal and said, instead of watching Netflix until the federal government saves us, we need to save ourselves. And I wonder who you're talking about here.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I was struck by something that one of the heads of a healthcare provider in my district said, which, you know, he said, you know, we really need to look beyond the hospitals themselves to defeat this disease. What's unique about this is that it requires each and every one of us to exhibit some personal discipline in terms of how we protect ourselves and our family to slow the spread. But the flip side of that is the solution and the path back to normalcy and saving both our lives and our economy is to rely upon the individual responsibility of Wisconsinites. And ultimately, it's my belief, as I say in the piece, that we may have a different strategy than Manhattan because we have a different geography and topography than Manhattan, a different type of population. We're more geographically dispersed, at least in my neck of the woods. But to that point, Madison and Milwaukee may have a different strategy than Green Bay, Alloway, or Brilliant. And so we need to figure out what that bottom-up approach looks like, because I think the sad reality is that no governor, no president, and certainly no member of Congress could design a top-down, one-size-fits-all approach to figure out what does social distancing look like within the context of every single Wisconsin business, small, medium, large, or otherwise, right? We're going to have to trust our people to step up and do what's right.
And just one more note on that. So you're not suggesting we not follow physical restrictions or businesses closing when health experts have recommended it. You're just saying we need to look forward. Are you hearing people not thinking forward and thinking that this lockdown will last forever, that you feel it's important to communicate to people to look into the future?
Emphatically, on your first point, I am not suggesting that we disobey the dictates of the CDC and health experts. In fact, I think we need to do everything possible that we can to slow the spread. My concern, however, is that I see this getting politicized. We seem to be being offered a choice between, you know, complete shutdown on the one hand and ignoring this and treating it like the seasonal flu on the other. My only point is that once we get out of this, you know, shutdown period, whether it's for another 30 days or longer, we need to be ready with a phased response, because it's not going to be like flipping on a switch and everyone goes back to normal. There's going to have to be a middle ground approach. And I just want us to think through that right now and not be caught unaware. I also think if you're going to ask Wisconsinites to sacrifice to stay indoors, to potentially endure some intense economic pain, you have to give them a light at the end of the tunnel. But I will say my entire argument is premised on our ability to use testing and data collection in order to understand the extent of the spread of the virus in Wisconsin. Right now, we are not where we need to be in terms of testing. There was very costly and painful delays early on. We are improving. I was encouraged by the governor's announcement of a public-private partnership. My hope is that with point-of-care tests that can turn around in mere minutes and not having to wait for days, we can start to get the data we need in order to arrive at that second phase of how we fight this.
U.S. Congressman Mike Gallagher is from the Green Bay area, representing Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District. And we are talking with him about the response to COVID-19. And we've got Jeff from Door County on the line who wants to join the conversation. What's on your mind, Jeff?
Yeah, good morning. As you know, Door County, we're a peninsula. And we've got a huge influx of people from Chicago and Milwaukee who understandably own homes up here. But the reality is we don't have an infrastructure to support people. If we only have one hospital. And we just had our first case yesterday. And I'm wondering what the plan is to prevent it from becoming a problem up here and there's no access to health care.
All right. Thanks for the question, Jeff. Congressman Gallagher, from your spot in Congress, how can we help places like Door County?
Well, to kind of reinforce a point I made earlier and what I've heard from every healthcare expert in Northeast Wisconsin, to include those in Door County, is the best way to prevent overloading the healthcare system is to abide by the guidelines the CDC and the Wisconsin Health Department has put out there. So, for example, if you are feeling symptomatic, you know, if you start to lose your sense of taste or smell, you start to get a fever, a dry cough, your first impulse should not be to rush to the emergency department or, you know, show up at your hospital. And in order to avoid overloading both the testing system and the hospital system, our hospitals are encouraging people that feel symptomatic to self-isolate and then obviously call your doctor, or if you don't have a consistent doctor, call the local hospital and get their advice before you rush to get a test. And if we can do that, we can prevent overloading the healthcare system and buy time for us to stock up on things like masks, ventilators, basic personal protective equipment. So that's first and most obvious. The second thing I'd say is that I know for a fact that all the healthcare providers in Door County are working exceptionally close with the bigger healthcare providers in Brown County and Outagamie, and everyone is putting aside their particular, portion of the rice bowl in order to work together. And so we are lucky in Northeast Wisconsin, but I would say Wisconsin more broadly, you have a very good healthcare system that consistently ranks in the top three in terms of outcome. That's not to say things couldn't get hairy in our neck of the woods, but I suspect, without being a healthcare expert, that they would tell you that the best thing you can do to prevent your hospital in Door County from getting overloaded is to just, you know, rigorously implement social distancing. But I would also say, to the extent you can, particularly in Door County, where we have a lot of seasonal businesses that endure hard economic months in the winter and rely upon making that up in the summer, now is a great time, if you can, to support those small businesses. See if you can get takeout from your local favorite restaurant in Sturgeon Bay or Fish Creek or Sister Bay and help them survive this very difficult period so that come summertime, we are all coming back to normal and they survive, and I can join you up in Door County to look back on how we weathered this crisis effectively.
And Congressman Gallagher, we just have about a minute left. I want to ask, you're calling for political fundraising to stop, saying elected officials should donate the money in their campaign war chest to coronavirus relief efforts. What donations have you made so far, and has anyone followed your lead?
Well, I don't think anyone's followed my lead. And just quickly, I just think it's crazy for politicians who already spend too much time raising money at a time when so many of our businesses and our nonprofits are struggling to try and, you know, raise money that's going to be spent on attack ads and consultants and polls. So I have committed to end political fundraising for the duration of this crisis, and I'm trying to donate at least $200,000 of my campaign funds to charity. We're going to be making the first tranche of donations, which adds up to about $50,000 later today when I call businesses or nonprofits in my district who are related to the crisis. And so my hope is to convince some of my colleagues, Democrats and Republicans, to follow suit. And again, it just seems weird, if not downright wrong, to be prioritizing political fundraising in the midst of a crisis that is so negatively affecting so many Wisconsinites.
Yeah, Congressman Gallagher, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
That was U.S. Representative Mike Gallagher talking about the COVID-19 pandemic and his role in Congress. Up next is news. I'm Keeley Boltina. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. School buildings are closed, but teachers are feverishly working to adjust their plans and their students to learning from a distance. The person who leads Wisconsin's K-12 schools is our guest, and we're talking about how the state is supporting districts when they've been ordered not to have kids at their desks. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keeley Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent, and there's a line for you at 800-642-1234. What do you want to ask the state superintendent about what's happening during the coronavirus pandemic or graduation rates, general priorities? How is your school managing this building shutdown? Do teachers and students have what they need? What's your perspective? Share it with us at 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Carolyn Stanford Taylor is Wisconsin State Superintendent of Public Instruction. She was appointed by Governor Tony Evers in January of 2019, and she previously served for 17 years as the Assistant State Superintendent for the Division for Learning Support. Superintendent Stanford Taylor, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you.
Help us understand, how well are schools managing the closures and students now learning from home?
Well, as you know, this is a health emergency that came without warning. And so while all districts had an emergency crisis plan and learned a little bit from the polar vortex, this is nothing close to those emergencies. We've never had a case of schools having to be closed for an indefinite period of time. And so I'm proud of the state. I'm proud of our schools, our administrators, educators, and our kids. I think they're doing a great job in trying to provide some continuity of education under these circumstances.
And we have seen, both in our reporting with WPR and anecdotally in our own lives, that you're right. I mean, this came and it feels like teachers were not expecting that at some point they might have to suddenly teach from afar, whether that is, you know, AP classes in high school or elementary students. So how is the state trying to support the schools that are right now kind of building these plans from the ground up?
Well, we have a number of resources at the state, and we've asked for a number of waivers for districts. One of the things we're considering is the waiver of the hours and minutes of instruction, because we don't have an end date for this. And so to assume that schools will be able to resume in the next 3-4 weeks, we have to look at the amount of time that's lapsed between that. We still had assessments, state assessments, federal assessments that need to be done. We've asked for a waiver from those. But right now, we're concentrating as our priority on getting kids fed and taking care of their social-emotional needs. That's number one priority. What we do understand, that you can't replicate what happens at a school during a school day in a home. We're not asking people to try to do 7 hours of instruction at home. We're asking that there be some continuation of education. And districts have done that in different ways. You've heard some have done packets of enrichment that they're calling it for their kids. Others have technology that they're able to do virtual education. So what this has really brought to light is the inequities across districts, the resource difference, the digital divide. And I think after this, we'll be able to really sit down and start to focus on where those gaps were and what we can do to try to assist in closing some of those gaps.
And long-term planning is certainly important and being able to analyze that, but there's inequity right now. What steps are schools taking to help low-income families who may have a higher need for assistance in this crisis?
Well, as I was saying, food is being distributed in every school district that I've heard from in some kind of way, whether it's been a pickup or drive-through and drop-off, grab-and-go, they've done that. In a lot of those areas in districts that have students who don't have technology at home, might not have Wi-Fi, don't have broadband, those kids are being given some packets. I know that districts are working on some online instruction, and there are companies that have stepped up. PBS has stepped up, and starting yesterday, I believe, has programming for K through 12 kids throughout the day, starting at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Are you concerned that what's happening right now and the fact that we're having to kind of treat different kids differently because of their means is going to widen the gap of and the inequities among our students?
Well, I believe that will happen. I know that districts are working hard to try to prevent that gap from widening. I know that all of the administrators that I've talked to and their staff are busy. They're in the school districts, are working with each other around providing plans. Some have teachers who are working in teams providing instruction online for kids. They're using Facebook. Many teachers are reaching out individually to kids. They're calling up their kids. How's it going? We've got administrator, example of one who's reading to their kids. So they can go online, go on Facebook, have a book read to them. So people are coming up with innovative ways to reach out to our students to say, hey, you matter. We want you to continue learning. We understand this is not the best environment, the best circumstances in which to learn. We've given examples of resources to parents. How do you create authentic learning for your kids? For younger kids, maybe you do a scavenger hunt. Maybe you include them in the lunch preparation. You cut the pizza into slices. You talk about fractions. So all of those kinds of things.
We're discussing how schools are responding to the new coronavirus with Wisconsin State Superintendent Carolyn Stanford Taylor. There's room for you in this discussion at 800-642-1234. How are you managing if you have children at home that are students and trying to study at home? Is your school having trouble in the transition, or do you see them really, really thriving here? What steps do you think the state should be taking? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 to weigh in on this discussion and talk with the state superintendent. And Superintendent Stanford Taylor, I wonder, how much did you play in the governor's decision to order schools closed? And what kind of conversations are you having now in the decision to monitor and eventually reopen?
We continue to have discussions with the governor and the governor's office as well as Department of Health. One of the things we talked to the governor about, and we had a discussion, I think it was mid-March, early March, around what was happening, what we were seeing happening around the country, and when first cases were kind of identified here. We had a number of districts. We have this group we call the Big Five. It's our largest districts in the state, includes Madison, Milwaukee, Green Bay, Kenosha, and Racine. And they had been talking with each other about this push to close schools. What we were worried about was the impact that that would have on the economy, have on parents, have on, and you see that effect right now. Schools close, there's a scramble. How do we continue learning for kids? And so they were pushing, because it was around spring break, to extend the spring break period. And initially, I think it was March 13th conversation, the governor agreed to close schools for a two-week period of time, which extended after that point, because as information, new information was coming in, he realized that the two-week period was not long enough. And so the last date we had was April 25th, and then it was until this emergency public health crisis is over.
The state is canceling its standardized test for the remainder of the school year. Why did you make that call?
Not knowing when we might be able to get back into schools, we didn't think it was fair for kids to have to take a test based on them completing an entire year in that grade. And the feds agreed with us. And this is something that's happening across the U.S. It's not just Wisconsin.
And could there be drawbacks, though, down the road to losing those one-year standardized snapshot of student achievement?
We probably will not have that. We're talking now about what we can report. So kids basically were able to complete three-quarters of a year. And so we're talking to districts about how do we evaluate that, especially with our seniors. How many students were already on track to graduate? And can we use the period of time that they've already spent working on their senior year to produce some kind of grade point or something that students would use to matriculate?
And how then will we gauge how well student achievement is being maintained while kids are not physically in the building?
I don't know that we will be able to for this period of time. We'll have to use the period of time in which they had been in the building.
Okay, so looking at trying to assess that amount of time and recognizing that what's happening right now is intentionally very different than when kids were actually physically in school.
Absolutely.
All right, we're talking with State Superintendent Carolyn Stanford Taylor, who stays with us through the end of this hour, and we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. We're wondering what you think about the situation here in Wisconsin, what questions you have for the state superintendent, what do you want to know about her goals or priorities for Wisconsin schools? What do you think the superintendent should know about what's happening in your part of Wisconsin, in your public schools? Give us a call now at 800-642-1234. We're talking about how schools are handling the COVID-19 pandemic and beyond, and your ideas are welcome. You can also email us at ideas@WPR.org or find us on Twitter, tweet at WPR Mornings. Our conversation with State Superintendent Carolyn Stanford Taylor continues here on The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. Many people are experiencing some grief as COVID-19 changes our lives right now. We see the headlines. Some people are getting sick, even dying from the new disease. Others are experiencing a different kind of loss. Children are feeling isolated from their classmates. Some students are missing out on rites of passage that we've taken for granted. We're talking about the ways COVID-19 affects education in Wisconsin with State Superintendent Carolyn Stanford Taylor. And there's still time to hear from you. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. What policies do you think would help students graduate more often or perform better on standardized tests? What are you seeing in your district right now that you think is important for the state superintendent to know about? You can email us at ideas@WPR.org or use that number, 800-642-1234. State Superintendent Veronica called from Janesville, couldn't stay with us, but wants to know what's being done to help kids who are possibly homeless or displaced, or maybe children who are experiencing abusive households. How is the state helping districts handle that?
So we have a student services prevention and wellness team that's working with our Department of Health and Services around our homeless kids. We know as a school system who our kids are, and they are checking on those kids, doing check-ins to make sure that they're safe.
And is there anything specific that the state is offering, any guidance or resources for kids that are in this position?
We do have a homeless coordinator with our school who is available to point out resources that are available for schools and others who have questions around that. Most school districts have their own programs for homeless, and that's part of what they're working out. The problem with having 421 school districts is that each one has their liaison to their homeless programs, and they've identified those for their families. So they will be in touch with their school districts around services that are available for our homeless students. Number one, as we were saying before, is to make sure that all of our students are being fed and are well mentally, socially.
So that they can learn then?
Yes, absolutely.
We've seen colleges across Wisconsin calling off graduation ceremonies this spring. Do you expect K-12 schools will also cancel ceremonies?
They're in conversation about that now and trying to figure out creative ways of getting our kids graduated and having some kind of ceremony around it. And all of that, again, depends on how long this health emergency lasts. It may be that there is some kind of summer ceremony or something for them, but each district is trying to figure out their own plan for doing that.
Graduation is a big rite of passage for students. What would you tell students or their families who are concerned about that or might be upset if they lose graduation ceremonies?
That's the hard thing, isn't it? And we've also been in touch with the university around their plans for our kids coming to them, and they're trying to figure out what they do for graduation. Is it online or... There are so many rites of passage that have been interrupted because of COVID-19. Kids are thinking about proms. They're thinking about athletic events and all of those things that have just been disrupted. And I know that school districts and others are trying to figure out plans for how they can salvage as much of this for their students as possible, whether it is using some of the summertime. I know they're in those conversations.
Earlier this month, the Department of Public Instruction reported that graduation rates continued on an upward trend with the class of 2019. How concerned are you that graduation rates could fall this year because of the pandemic?
I'm sorry, I missed that.
We've seen that graduation rates in Wisconsin are on an upward trend, and I wonder how concerned you are that graduation rates may go down because of COVID-19.
We are so excited about graduation rates going up, especially for some of our most vulnerable populations that we've been really concerned about. So this new information is really exciting. We are concerned, but I think there are ways that we can help maintain that upward movement. If you think about it, you think about the summer when school is out of session. We always worry about that summer loss. And if we look at this period of time, it's kind of like summer loss. But what can we do perhaps during the summer that will continue that learning so that we don't have added to the summer lapse additional time?
We are discussing how schools are responding to the coronavirus with Wisconsin State Superintendent Carolyn Stanford Taylor, and we're talking about other initiatives and priorities within the department. And State Superintendent, earlier this year, before the pandemic, we heard Governor Evers urging lawmakers to hike school funding with money that was from an anticipated surplus in tax collections, specifically in the realm of mental health. Do you support a proposal like that after the pandemic as far as trying to take care of students and their, you know, their cognitive and their emotional well-being?
I think if you've looked at the research that's been out there since we've been in this COVID-19 time period, they're talking about the concern around mental health, the concern around the disruption of daily life and activities, the heightened concern around what happens with adults who are under stress and kids who are under stress. So I think it's only heightening the need for more mental health services. And yes, that will be one of our asks in the next budget. We got additional dollars the last biennium. We will be asking for an increase in those dollars. While what we got is a help, we understand that the needs are greater than the resources that we have available for us.
And the next budget seems so far away at this point, but it sounds like you're looking at some of the priorities for it that may have changed or may need to be adjusted based on what's happening right now?
We are. We are absolutely doing that. One of the other needs was around this continuation of learning. And because of this disruption, that makes that even more critical as well. Extended learning opportunities for our kids, whether it's in the morning, it's after school, it's on Saturdays, or summer learning. We'll need that. We'll need additional dollars.
And what about equity? Let's circle back to that, because at the start of the school year, you called equity the focus of your agenda. How are you trying to bring more equity into the state with those achievement gaps in under these circumstances?
That is exactly what we're trying to do. So we're looking at who we're identifying our populations of kids who are not doing as well as their counterparts. And what are the needs around that? What is the data telling us that we need to do? So, again, part of it is the extended learning opportunities. It's the early childhood piece. If we continue to provide resources to have our kids ready for school, that they start on an even playground, we're going to be doing so much better in the long run. Our kids will not come with language deficits. Our kids will come with the social-emotional learning that they need, the competencies that they need. They will be able to read by the time that they get to third grade so that we're not doing so much remediation. So if we can front-load those dollars, that's going to help us so much on the back end.
Superintendent Stanford Taylor, thank you for joining us, and we'd certainly welcome you back as we see things change this spring. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Carolyn Stanford Taylor is Wisconsin State Superintendent of Public Instruction. We've been talking about education during and after this coronavirus pandemic. And if you've missed part of our conversation, you can find it later today on our program page. Just visit WPR.org/mornings. Just ahead, Dr. Zorba Pastor joins the morning show and fields your questions about the coronavirus and other health conditions. I'm Keely Boltina. Thanks for being with us today. You're listening to the Ideas Network.